Dr. Finlayson Fife will be in Alpine, Utah next week on Thursday, September 10th, with a workshop just for mid-singles. We only have 5 tickets left, so click the link in the show notes to learn more about the event and get one of the last few tickets. I also wanted to remind you that our Labor Day sale is going strong through Monday. All full-length online courses are buy one, get one 50% off. This is the perfect opportunity to complete your JFF library, so click the link in the show notes and use the code LABOROFLOVE to apply your discount. We are also quickly approaching our deadline for our New Zealand tour. It's going to be an amazing time. We just went over the itinerary. I heard talk of glowworm caves and helicopter rides and all sorts of incredible things. These tours are the highlight of the year, and we would love to have you join us. I'll put that link in the show notes as well. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy the episode.
Obedience is the first law. It's the beginning. It's where we start. But if we're really maturing spiritually, we're moving more and more from the letter of the law to the ability to not be commanded in all things, to discern the spirit of the law, to assert our agency, to choose, to be wise actors.
Welcome to Conversations with Dr. Jennifer, a collection of interviews on the topics of relationships, sexuality, spirituality, and more, all featuring Dr. Finlayson Fife.
Welcome to Mormon Land, where we explore news in and about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm senior religion reporter Peggy Fletcher Stack. Joining me is senior managing editor Dave Noyce, who oversees our faith coverage. Hi, Dave.
Hello, Peggy.
Before we start, here's a quick ask. We invite you to go to patreon.com, where you can access all the Tribune's faith coverage, ad-free podcast episodes, and the full Mormon Land newsletter. Again, that's Patreon, patreon.com/Mormonland. And if you haven't already, follow us on Instagram at Mormon.land. Now for today's show. Sexual standards set by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints may seem clear. No sex before marriage, total fidelity during marriage. Guidelines for sexual activity are set out for young Latter-day Saints in publications like For the Strength of Youth. But what about older singles who have never wed or those whose marriages end in divorce or death? How do they navigate the possibility of intimacy? Jennifer Finlayson Fife, a well-known Latter-day Saint sex therapist and author of That We Might Have Joy, Desire, Divinity, and Intimate Love, will be addressing older singles in Alpine on September 10th and the complex realities they face. She joins us today to talk about these realities and how to understand the difference between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. Jennifer, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Starting with the church expects chastity before marriage. What does that mean actually? And what are some of the reasons behind it, do you think?
Yeah, well, I think what does it mean is maybe a kind of broad question, because I think many of us look at that from different positions in our lives, some much more out of fear, some much more out of an understanding of a wise perspective on how to navigate sexuality. But I think at a minimum, we are a church that values sexuality and particularly committed sexuality and fidelity. And so we expect a high standard around how we relate to sexuality and sensuality, particularly up until we get married. And so we think of the law of chastity generally. I think we think of it more as an idea of what we shouldn't do, of limitations, of safeguards around our sensual and sexual lives, rather than a maybe broader perspective that could be understood as a way to preserve the soulfulness of our sexual nature.
So do you think it's a good goal as someone who deals with sexual issues? You think,
yes,
no sex before marriage is a good goal?
Well, I certainly think it can be. And I think the way that we relate to it matters significantly. You know, I wrote my dissertation on LDS women and sexual agency, and there were two very different groups in terms of how they related to the restrictions and what impact it had on their married lives. The group that did poorly tended to see sex as inherently dangerous. They feared their body's capacity for pleasure and desire and arousal. They had anxiety around those feelings. And they therefore kind of never took full ownership of this capacity, this God-given capacity. And so even when sex became technically legal, it didn't actually translate for most of these women into a kind of freedom and a freedom to express and know a part of themselves. The women who did well, which was the minority, they saw sex and pleasure as a really good thing, something that God had given them, something that they were grateful for, even though they wanted to be in a careful relationship with this powerful way of being in connection with another person. So they saw the law of chastity as something that was protective and ultimately offering them something that they desired, which was committed sexuality. So this, how we relate to the standard is a really big deal and, you know, it has real implications for life.
So now I want to turn to Jennifer, kind of what this podcast is mostly going to be about. What about older singles who have never found a spouse? Does that mean that they shouldn't have any physically intimate experiences?
Well, I think that in the church, we have an easier time knowing how to talk to, say, a 17-year-old about sexual chastity because there's a wisdom in it. We're trying to protect our young people from getting out over their skis and doing something that could have really negative ramifications for their own souls, for the soul of another person, that they could become pregnant. You know, there's a lot of reasons to want our kids, particularly in a sex-saturated culture, to value restraint and caution and moving towards commitment in which sex can be a blessing in their lives. But I think in the church, there's a growing population of single Latter-day Saints. In fact, I think it outnumbers married Latter-day Saints adults at this point. And we want the idea that it's all the same. But of course, if you've already been married, if you're now widowed, if you're now a functioning adult, which is different than a young adult who's still trying to kind of sort out life. So we want the idea that for the strength of youth, emphasis on youth, should apply. And yet I think we all know on some level it isn't the same. And I think that there is more complexity than sometimes we are very good at handling theologically, even though I think our theology is pointing us towards handling complexity.
So the rules, for lack of a better word, should be different?
I don't know if the rules is quite the right idea. You know, I recently did a Facebook Live with single adults, and I started by just thinking about what is chastity about? What is the goal? If we believe in a God who doesn't want us to have pleasure in our lives, doesn't want us to have joy in our lives, then the only goal is repression. Stay away from it. It's all dangerous. Pleasure is a bad thing. That isn't our theology. We don't believe that. We are that we might have joy. And to have joy is to be in a wise relationship with the pleasures, the beauties, the sensual of being embodied spiritual creatures. And so I think our early high expectations are trying to prepare us for the ability to be in wise relationship to the sensual, in wise relationship to pleasure. What it's also doing, I think, is in the early stages of our spiritual development, we're depending heavily on external authority. We haven't yet developed the internal compass and capacity to make good decisions. And so being kind of given very clear limits and guidelines protects us, but it protects us to ultimately grow into people that are more capable of discerning what is best, what is right for my situation, what is loving, what in fact cultivates more soulfulness in my life, what is the kind of pleasure that opens me up to goodness and beauty and is good for my soul. Do we use pleasure to escape our lives, right? Do we either deny pleasure or use it to get away from our conscience? Or are we in relationship to pleasure and beauty in a way that cultivates soulfulness, that blesses our lives, that opens us up to joy? And so we need to grow beyond the just pure dependence on someone telling us what we can and can't do into deeper integrity, deeper discernment, deeper ability to choose what we believe is truly good and right.
Do you see a difference between older single adults who have never been married versus those who are older and are now divorced or widowed?
Well, I can certainly see a difference in terms of what one is navigating, because it's one thing to hold a limit around sexual behavior towards something you've never experienced versus having been in a marriage, enjoying sexuality for a few decades, for example, and then suddenly being single again. Those are different challenges. They're different questions. I genuinely don't know, nor do I think I should be telling people what they should do. But I think they are up against challenging questions around what do I value? What do I believe is right and good? And what does it ask of me? We want a world in which we have easy answers and we get clear upsides to obeying those easy answers. And I don't think that's really how adulthood is. It's really like Adam and Eve. It's this discernment and asserting choices in complexity, with tolerating loss and uncertainty as a part of that. But we do our best when we really choose in line with what our conscience dictates to us, not a conscience given to us by somebody else and out of fear we just go along, but what we really feel in our souls is right. And you know, one real difference in the women who thrived around the law of chastity and those who struggled more with fear and anxiety around sex, the women who thrived, they really claimed their choices as their own. They weren't like, oh, I'm obeying the law of chastity, so a man will accept me, and so God will think I'm good. They didn't talk in terms of this external reference. They talked in terms of their own desires, their own values, what they wanted for their lives. And so they were very self-authoring, even though to the naked eye, it might have looked compliant.
So let's talk about couples for a minute, because it relates to couples, you know, people yeah. who lose their spouses. Some Latter-day Saint couples may not have had a good sexual relationship or any in their marriage, but mm-hmm. say they are happy. Do you think a marriage without sex can be fulfilling?
I think it probably can. You know, nobody comes to my office that's happy in a sexless marriage. I only hear from the ones that are unhappy. And, you know, often there's a lack of sexual activity. And the person that is often initiating that conversation with me, looking for help, is often the person that doesn't feel desired. Right? Because even the low desire person for sex still often has the experience of being desired. They know they are the focus of their spouse's attention and energy. And I think the way that most of us set up marriage and understand marriage is that it's about the kind of core foundational meaning is you are special to me. Right? I've chosen you among other options. That's really the romantic ideal. And it's the way that most of us get married. We're not just trying to, you know, bring two kingdoms together anymore or just survive on the frontier. Okay. And so when that meaning seems to erode, then that meaning often erodes the happiness of at least the person who doesn't feel desired or special. I think it's less about intercourse per se, and more about this feeling that I like you, that you're special to me, and that I'm not going to bring my sexuality elsewhere. But I'm not here to say that no couples have negotiated a sexless marriage in a way that they're both at peace with. I'm sure that that's true.
So is it usually one partner who desires sex, the other doesn't? Or do you know couples where neither is well interested?
I'm just thinking about that. I don't know that I've ever had a couple come to me where they're both not interested.
they wouldn't but be coming to you otherwise.
Yes. I just don't know a representative sample. I'm sure that exists. Okay. Yeah. I really am. I'm sure it does exist.
Is there any research on this, Jennifer?
Not that I am privy to or that I'm aware of. I'm sure there must be, but I don't know.
Okay.
I'm sure that there are couples, especially as they grow older in life, they make their peace with the sexlessness of the marriage, and they make their peace with what the marriage is and what it isn't. I mean, that's a part of dealing with complexity of life, that there's many marriages that are very strong in certain areas and they do very well as a couple, but sex and intimacy has never been their strength. There's other marriages where that is more their strength and they struggle to collaborate around other parts of their marriage. So I'm sure that there are couples that have made genuine peace with that fact. But what I think is, at least what I'm privy to, is more often the person that's higher desire feels powerless. And so there is a kind of quiet resentment that lives in the marriage that keeps it from thriving because it's an issue that doesn't get dealt with in a constructive way.
So let's go back to unmarried couples, or, mm-hmm. Older couples. Would you advise some older unmarried couples, whether never married or previously married, to experiment with sexual involvement before committing to marriage?
I think that it's, first of all, I do think there's something about two things I would say about it. I think that there is something that's valuable in the dating years, whether a younger single or an older single, is enjoying the energy of desire for the other person. And that this is really important, even in marriage, that you're not just rushing to intercourse, for example, but that you've learned how to be in that erotic energy. You know how to cultivate it. You know how to enjoy it. It's an important energy for marriages to thrive. And what a lot of people do is they do a lot of that as single Latter-day Saints because they're holding the line. They feel a lot of that energy and excitement. And then they get married and it turns quickly into expectation. And this is my duty as the wife. And so all the erotic energy just goes away very quickly. And so I do think a lot of people feel like, okay, no, it's those feelings that are dangerous. Those feelings are wrong. And I don't personally believe that. I think those feelings are the glue of a relationship. I think it's a spiritual energy, even. It's an energy, Eros energy, wakes you up to the wonder and the beauty of this other soul. It's a binding energy. It's really what, you know, we're pulling together two different worlds. The core energy of sex and attraction is difference, yin and yang. You go find this person that's 100% different than you and you say, you know what, let's share a life together. and it's completely irrational if you just want a life of ease. But we don't just want a life of ease. We want the tension that exists in bringing our souls together with a different soul. That's really the energy of attraction. And so I think that's important energy to understand in ourselves, to not run away from, to not be so afraid of. And I think dating and understanding that energy, and is that an energy that's resonant with the person you're with? Do you feel an ease in that way? Or is it always awkward? Is it always forced? Are you always trying to convince yourself that you're attracted? Is it something that's not kind of super rational? I don't mean irrational. I mean, there's a draw to this person that doesn't live in the world of rationality, but it's real. I think it's important to know that on some level, if you want a marriage that feels alive that way, that attraction is a real part of it, The only other caveat I would give, though, is that it's often very hard to know what a marriage will be because the circumstances of dating are often very different. Even living together is a different reality than marriage, where there's a commitment. And you don't always know, because a lot of people felt a lot of that energy. Then they got married, but the meanings changed, or the way they related to each other changed. And so therefore sexual desire and chemistry also shifted. So sometimes we can't fully know until we're doing commitment and doing marriage, what challenges we're up against in ourselves and in the relationship.
So I'm going to push a little on the question of sexual involvement. Let's say you're older, you already had sexual relations with your spouse. Yes, I hear the idea of sexual energy and not just going for full on intercourse, but once you've had it, it seems a little awkward to stop. Yeah. There have to be other things you can do besides that, that are still intimate, right?
Yes. You're saying there's things that you can do besides intercourse that are still very intimate. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yes. There are.
And that, yes, as you say, I mean, there's a lot of fear about it because people are like, oh, we can't sort of go all the way. But I guess I would say married couples or somebody who's been married, it would be hard to do nothing or do the sort of breast strength of youth thing, I guess. Yes.
Well, I think, you know, we say in the church that we live in a kind of tension between obedience and integrity, or letter of the law and spirit of the law, or, the iron rod versus the Liahona. I'm just trying to think of all the metaphors I've heard, you know, and we really, really like the idea of obedience. We like very much that this is the rule. You should obey it. You'll get rewarded later. Don't worry about it. And I can see from a leadership position why one, as a parent, I certainly like the idea of obedience more than my kids' agency. But I think that what our spiritual development, you know, obedience is the first law. It's the beginning. It's where we start. But if we're really maturing spiritually, we're moving more and more from the letter of the law to the ability to not be commanded in all things, to discern the spirit of the law, to assert our agency, to choose, to be wise actors. We really believe in a theology that we can become more godly, right? Meaning become wiser and not just stay dependent, being commanded in all things, looking to other people. It's a moral laziness. And, you know, I know some people would hear that and could say, okay, great, I can do whatever I want because that's maturity. And that's not what I mean either, of course. I mean that you really are in a real conversation with your conscience, with divinity, around what is right for me. What is the right thing in my situation? Where does the greatest good come from this? And to grow out of our dependency on having someone else tell us, as in take responsibility for our choices. Because even deferring to what everyone says is a choice, and it's one we live in the consequences of, and it may not be the most right choice.
So are there other considerations? Again, we're talking about older singles past the possibility of children, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. That's something that younger couples have to deal with, the possibility that having sex means getting pregnant or whatever. So you're past that. Would there be other considerations where a sexual relationship could be good, but marriage maybe not? Does that make sense?
I think, you know, again, it's that complexity, but I know of situations where people were divorced. They were, you know, had adolescent kids in the home, and getting married and blending families would be very bad for their kids, and struggling between this is a person I love, and yet getting married right now is not the right thing for my family. You know, some people could say, well, you just have to like wait and you have to just suffer for the next 6 years. And again, I'm not here to say what people should do because I'm not in their lives. I'm not living in the consequences of their lives. But I do think adulthood and wisdom ask us to really discern what we believe is most right for our situation. And it may mean we're making choices that other people think we shouldn't choose because it doesn't fit with what is in some narrow idea of what is goodness.
So let me ask you, what could the church do as an institution to help older singles handle these situations better?
It's a good question. And I think we would do well to more deeply integrate understandings of spiritual development. You know, that what we need as a 20-year-old may be very different than what we need as a 60-year-old. And to better understand what we're aiming for. You know, institutions tend to struggle with helping people to grow into the spirit of the law because you don't have as much control. All institutions tend to function to reinforce themselves. That's what they're best at. But I think we can still do a better job of pointing people towards growing line upon line into deeper wisdom, deeper capacity for discernment, and understanding what is the larger value of chastity. Thomas More, in his book, The Soul of Sex, which is one of my favorite books, writes about chastity, not just as restriction and restraint and a denial of pleasure, but rather an ideal that's pointing us towards being able to experience the soulfulness of sex, being able to safeguard our souls and the spiritual nature of who we are through our sexuality. And so it has a self-control in it, because if we just are indulgent and never get a hold of our bodies, we let our bodies and our impulses run our lives, those impulses will run our lives into the ground. So there is a value in learning self-control and self-regulation, but it's not for its own sake. It's so that you can experience the beauty and richness and wonder of being alive, of being a physical, sensual being in a fallen world, but in a world in which there's also great beauty and goodness that our souls can experience through the body. And so if we could teach chastity with that larger view, not just of do's and don'ts, but perhaps with why we want to learn self-control, why we don't want a steady diet of porn and masturbation, not because sexuality and desire are inherently wrong, but because we want to live our lives in a way that we are more able to experience the depth of goodness, the intimacy of a rich connection with our lives and with another soul, and that being careful with our choices makes this more possible in our lives. But also teaching movement away from dependence. You want to consult with your leaders. You want to consult with wise others. You want to consult in prayer, right? But you want to get to a place where you can take deeper ownership of your choices and stand by them as your own, not in the kind of moral laziness of, well, someone else told me to do it, so I did it. Where's my reward?
So final question, how should older singles, whether never married or previously married, how should they think about intimacy?
Well, I think that we have fear of the body, even though it's not our theology to be afraid of it. The body is an instrument of perception. And I think that whether single or partnered, learning how to embrace the goodness and beauty in life through the body, to enjoy more, to enjoy dance, to enjoy good food, to allow ourselves to take in the pleasures that are around us, whether we're in a partnership or we're single, I think is really good for all of us. And intimacy is at its best when we can enjoy and be enjoyed. We can do this in friendship. Okay. We can do this in an intimate partnership, but intimacy is really a freedom to be our full selves as flawed human beings, as embodied human beings, and to dare to let ourselves be knowable both to ourselves and to another. And that's spiritual work right there. We tend to come into our religious training with this idea that we are fallen and broken. And every time we make a mistake, Christ is suffering a little more retroactively, you know, that kind of thinking, rather than, no, we are beloved. And yes, in a fallen world, to grow and to learn and to grow in ways that will open us up to more joy. And that's a process. And it's an intimate process. It's coming to learn or answer the question, am I lovable and can I love? Those are the kind of core questions of our spirituality, in my view. And so we should be looking at those questions, whether we're in a marriage or not, and allowing ourselves to take part in the goodness in life, in being alive and being blessed to be here.
Fascinating, important conversation. Thanks, Jennifer, for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, we ask that you please rate, review, and share the podcast so that more people can find and benefit from Dr. Jennifer's work.